Welcome to the Let Me Say This podcast. If you don't know who the host is, my name is Antonio Laborte. You could be doing a thousand different things right now, but instead you decided to come here, listen to me, listen to this podcast. So I appreciate you for that. Thank you so very much. I hope that you enjoy, and I hope it's a good listen for you. Thanks. So to get a sense of how one sees like this current case with Tua and how they'll operate in the future, it's important to know how things like concussions are defined in the NFL and like what the protocols are and as they stand now. So the NFL has defined a sport-related concussion as, quote, a traumatic brain injury induced by biomechanical forces. The NFL player health and safety fact sheet, which you can find on their website, it states that concussions can be caused by direct hits to the head, face, neck, or anywhere else on the body that transmits force to the head. So some of these signs can include, which is key here, right, any loss of consciousness, seizures, delayed movement, difficulty with motor or balance coordination, a vacant look, clutching the head, confusion, amnesia, or visible face injuries. So everything seems pretty standard, right? It seems kind of obvious. I mean, some of those things you may have not known, but other than that, all those signs seem like obvious things to look out for, right? What I didn't know is what the protocols on and during game days would look like, right? So the NFL has these things called UNCs, or unaffiliated neurotrauma consultants. These are people that are going to be on the sidelines to check for any type of signs of concussions by any of the players that they see. Each team has one, but each UNC is not just responsible for their own team. If they see some of these signs of concussion on the other team, they can also call that out too. So if there appears to be any signs of concussion, a team physician must be ready to conduct an examination on the sidelines. So you have the UNCs and you also have the physicians there that are available too. If the physician verifies the signs, then the player is sent back to the locker room for further evaluation and may not return to the game. And once a player has been diagnosed with a concussion, he is not allowed to meet or talk with the press or drive on the day of that injury. And so with all that being said, I think there's two important things that you get to think about. The first is the piece of evidence that we saw, which is a little more subjective, but it's still relevant in this case, right? Is the video footage of Tua on the game Sunday against the Bills showing one of those signs of concussion after he tried to return to his feet and he like lost his balance and he looked like he was a little disoriented, right? Also given the fact that in that game, the heat being up near 113 degrees on the field, right? He already sustained that injury and they kind of let that go without really recognizing that. Until it was after the game where Mike McDaniels, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, during that press conference, he walked back his statement about him believing that, yeah, Tua did sustain some type of injury to his head. And he kind of redacted that. And he said, nah, actually, I think most of the discomfort is coming from Tua's back. And then the official injury report ended up listing it as a back injury for Tua. So, I mean, when you think about it, right? Sure, with the game, I mean, the game is rooted in some type of violence, right? There is this constant hitting and back and forth. But, you know, you have to look at each encounter within the field of play differently in terms of how, you know, you assess and determine what's too far and what's just football. Because you might look at a play and not think anything of it, right? He got hit, he got back up, he kind of stumbled a little bit, but then he was good to go to resume play. But it's like, nah, you can't take those little things for granted. It may not seem like a big deal, and maybe sometimes it isn't, but you got to play it on the side of safety rather than kind of just let those little things go, and then they, you know, stack up, and they keep happening, and then it can result in something even worse, right? I think that should increase the sensitivity rather than just downplay these instances as these inevitable bumps and bruises in the game, because you may hear players from back in the day or even now, you know, talk about sometimes where you kind of play through injuries and stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's a violent game. Like, there's going to be these micro injuries, but I don't think the mentality should just be to kind of gloss over it, you know what I mean, and only react if there's like a huge bone break or something or whatever. Like, these things got to be taken carefully, right? Because you might, again, these little things add up. And you don't know when the time is going to be the one that puts it all, you know, to bed. And the casual observer could have seen that Tua's behavior was kind of odd. And honestly, if you want to put it more appropriately, it was disturbing when he tried to get back up in that game for the Bills game. I'm not even talking about the Bengals one and the Bills game. Like, the dude, like, he was disoriented. Like, he stumbled over himself and he's shaking his head. Like, that's clear signs of, like, something serious going on there. But, you know, questions about his availability and safety to play, you know, they came up once that game was over Sunday. And they had to go back and play again 4 days later on Thursday night. And he was expected to go ahead and withstand all that, you know, same level of contact. He's already compromised. And for those of you who don't, and this needs context too, right? For those of you who may not or only heard of Tua after this week, right? This dude's only 24, but he has an extensive list of injuries that happened in both college and the NFL that already place him in this precarious spot when it comes to how you have to look at him and his injuries and his ability to play on the field, right? One injury in particular is the same one that cut the two pro athlete Bo Jackson, his career short, right? Like, he broke and fractured his hip. He dislocated and fractured his hip in college when he was at Alabama, which took him out for the season completely. But you have to think, like, if this guy already has these serious injuries, you can't really take his health for granted. You know what I mean? Especially when it comes to something with the head. Like, you can't mess around with that. You know what I mean? You know, the Dolphins know his injury history. They've dealt with it themselves. They're dealing with it again now. You know, now they're at the center of what is hopefully a much-needed oversight of the way that these decisions are going to be playing out. And how you decide to whether send somebody back out there or play it safe or be a little more cautious. I'm waiting to see what kind of happens with these investigations. We're seeing some more players and teams now. I don't know if it's related. I mean, I'm assuming it would be given how much attention this has gotten. But you're already seeing teams now kind of be a little more careful with their guys. They may, you know, guys who may have expected to come back may be held a little bit longer, getting a little more evaluation. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think if you want to, especially with this game, man, because, like, you know, take the time to make sure these guys are good, you know? I mean, you're getting hit every play. You got grown men, 200 plus pounds, running full speed at you, hitting you in your chest, your legs, your knees. Like, it's just, it's something to be a little more cautious about. And I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a little extra safe. So we still got to see what's going to happen with Tua himself, even though he was cleared from the hospital that same night. He flew back with the team. Whether that's the right thing to do, I don't know. I'm not the doctor here, right? But he flew back with the team. He was you know, dismissed from the hospital. So things seem to be on the up and up and, you know, doing better for him. But still, we got to see what happens moving forward with their concussion protocols and all that. So moving on to the news and in the world of Kanye West, long story short, he had a fashion show with models wearing White Lives Matter shirts. So yeah, my question now, right, because I mean, here's what it is, point blank. My question becomes, does he even deserve any outrage at this point? Because it seems clear that, like, what drives his public behavior was and will always will be something that gets the needle moving. Like, attention creates buzz, right? And then when this buzz is captured at the right time, it can create this pocket of opportunity. One that can lead to more sales, more business, more attention, all that stuff, right? And Kanye's sense of genius, I feel like, is overstated just because his ability to create good music is there, right? It's not unfounded, like, it's not implausible or unreasonable to say that he doesn't have these genius qualities, right? But just because someone is extremely skilled does not mean that their talent overrides any negative attributes that they may have. And I want to make it clear, too, I'm only discussing his personal life, and from a very limited viewpoint, and his public persona has always been marked by this flashy, boastful, I am who I am, love it or hate it type of identity, right? And so what's become more apparent, at least to me, but I know I'm not the only one who's come to understand this, right? is that he will cater to different audiences depending on, you know, what he needs at that point in time. If he needs to organize and become an activist, he throws on that organizer and activist uniform, right? If he needs the Christian faithful to come to his rescue and be in support of him, he'll throw that outfit on. If he needs white corporate America to write him a check or put their arm around him, you know, he'll pull that uniform out the closet too and put that thing on. So it's clear that at Kanye's best, right, or I should say in best case scenario when it comes to looking at this, he's just attention hungry and / or money hungry, which for him, they kind of go hand in hand at this point because they both mutually benefit one another. He makes more money, gets more attention, or he gets more attention, it helps his profit, whatever, right? But at its worst, he's someone who can just be bought and moved when desperate enough while also not caring about how that affects the way people view him. And it leaves us in a situation that it's not new, right? But it's often more likely a situation we find ourselves in frequently with like famous artists and celebrities and things like that. And that is, at what point do we lose our own sense of like moral judgment and self-respect trying to separate the art from the artist? At what point do we stop putting our cape on for our favorite artist or our favorite athlete or whoever because they made album XYZ, or they created our favorite shoe, or they help our team win games, or, you know, whatever space these people tend to be in? You know, when do we come to that conclusion? And that's where I think the important question lands, right? Because it does matter at some point that we have the courage to not feed into someone or something that is comfortable just manipulating their audience at any means notice, right? And it's hard to kick that drug, man. It's hard to be above what you know to be bad for you, especially when it's just easier to and more convenient to just kind of put up with it or compartmentalize it or separate, like I said, the artist and the art, right? It's just easier to do that. And I find it difficult too. So, you know, I don't think it's fair for me to make it seem that like you have to pick one way or the other, or like this is a very easy thing to do, because this isn't the first person either that where we have to have this kind of conversation, right? But I think with Kanye and these other artists like him, we do have to decide for ourselves, you know, when does it reach a point where we won't accept their foolishness, you know, whatever shit that they're doing in the media and whatnot. And if we don't have a point, right, where we do decide, like, hey, enough's enough, you know, what does that say about us? You know what I mean? If we can't figure out that point, or we can't kick this person, this thing off our, you know, out of our system, that's a question that we got to ask ourselves, and the answer may not be too, you know, too kind to how we view ourselves and our standards. So it is tough, but, you know, I feel like that's the biggest thing taken away with this. It's not even so much about the specific thing that he's doing. It's just that it's a pattern of behavior. And now it's like, all right, what, you know, when is enough enough, you know, so.